Great to have you along with us, America. It's 20 minutes after the top of the hour. With us right now is Bruce Thatcher. His book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work, Sensible Solutions for One of the Most Volatile Issues That We Face Today. Bruce, how you doing? Good to have you with us, sir.
I'm doing just good fine this morning, Bill.
Well, this Gang of Eight proposal, I mean, you get to be king here. What's right, what's wrong about this? I mean, with all your research on immigration, I mean, you went in depth in your book on immigration with all the different civilizations and the history of the world just about where immigration was effective, what it wasn't. You broke it down, and it's right there, and if only... You know, our congressmen and senators had a copy of your book and actually read it. Of course, they can't manage to read Obamacare, so even though your book is quite a bit less, it's not 2,700 pages, but it's near 500 pages of absolute just phenomenal research that they need to absorb to understand just how significant immigration policy is for the future of this country and our national security.
The book is about 460 pages or so, and that's only about half the size of the Gang of Eight bill that's being debated in the Senate, Senate Bill 744, which is almost 900 pages long, and I have finally gotten through most of that bill, and I am not impressed. It has represented as comprehensive immigration reform. Comprehensive means dealing with all or most of the relevant details of, in this case, the immigration policy. I went through the bill, and I asked myself as I was reading it, how would, had this bill been in effect for the last 10 years, how would that have changed the actual immigration in this country? And I worked the numbers using the Department of Homeland Security statistics, and in fact, it wouldn't have changed it at all, or almost not at all. The exact same immigrants would are provided for under this bill as were provided for under the original Hart-Celler Act of 1965, and we would have had, in fact, a total of about 7% more total immigrants under the Gang of Eight bill, because the only change the bill makes in the legal immigrants who can come to this country are it eliminates the diversity lottery, which is about 4% of the total immigrants, and it adds a merit-based preference system, which ends up being about 8 or 10%, 1,200,000 over 10 years, and it leaves everything else exactly unchanged, hardly comprehensive. And the worst part about that is that Marco Rubio rhetorically refers to fixing our broken immigration system. Arguably, one of the most broken parts of the immigration system is the provision it makes for unlimited immigration of immediate relatives of U.S. citizens. That's the chain immigration problem that has grown from 330,000 or so a year back in the late 60s to now 500,000 a year. It's the biggest single chunk of our immigrants, and those immigrants, the family immigrants, which combined with the U.S. with the unlimited category, have to meet no criteria whatsoever except that they're related to somebody who's already here.
So what would happen with this, with these stipulations that they would have to speak English and you know, have some kind of support and that sort of thing? That just goes all by the wayside. They just, you know, they just get to run.
A stipulation has to be made that family members have to have some kind of support. There's no stipulation about speaking English whatsoever. The only speaking English provision for immigrants, and we're not talking about naturalization, for immigrants, in the existing law, is there is none at all. In the new law, in the Gang of Eight proposal, there is an English language points awarded to the merit-based preference category that's established that, in effect, says that these people, those that small group, if they can speak English, then they have more points awarded and they have a better chance of getting into the country. But that's less than 10% of total immigrants. There are some good things. There are some good things in the Act. It incorporates the STEM Act idea so that foreign students in scientific, technical, engineering, and math fields who graduate from American universities would now allow to be stayed here as temporary workers, mm-hmm. as guest workers, rather than being required to leave the country. Almost everybody agrees that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It does implement the DREAM Act so that the status of the children of illegals who were brought here by their parents and who have attended schools here and universities are legalized and can remain here and work. It does add this merit-based preference system, which increases the economic aspect of advantage of immigration. And it adds about 180,000, 200,000 additional guest workers and temporary and agricultural workers, which most economists and business certainly agrees are needed. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there is no change. There's just adding to.
Well, so that, but then we go back to the other question, Bruce, that's been looming, and that is it enforceable? And by that, will they enforce whatever it is, whatever law they pass?
I think here's the sham that's being put over on this bill. A provision of the Senate bill calls for implementation of the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigration Responsibility Act of 1996, which was essentially related to enforcement and control. Mm-hmm. 17 years later, we're putting a piece in the law that says we have to implement a law that was passed 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. There is a provision, actual wording in this proposal that says until that law of 17 years ago is implemented, then E-Verify should continue to be used. E-Verify was something that was developed because that tough control law was never implemented. It sets in place a mandatory exit visa system, or it mandates that there will be an exit visa system put in place so that we can keep track of who comes and goes, but it applies only to the sea and air ports, not to the land ports.
Amazing. Bruce Thatcher is our guest. His book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. Bruce, obviously there are so many moving parts to this immigration policy and with the Gang of Eight, and you say really between what was done earlier and what is being proposed, there's very little offering in terms of difference. And what I've been saying all along is that there doesn't seem to be a great incentive for, let's just say, Democrats to work out something that is going to be win-win for all concerned, only because, you know, they want to make sure they get all the credit. I mean, there's a 25% swing here in the 2012 elections with Hispanics for voting for Democrats and for Obama, and they're not about to give up that vote lightly, so they need to come out as the heroes, and there's no way they're going to allow a guy like Marco Rubio to take the stage away from him. And if anything, it looks like Rubio could end up being a casualty over this.
Well, it's interesting to speculate on exactly that, because Rubio is certainly out front, the major spokesman among the Republican leaders in favor of this proposal. I don't hear any of the other three Republican members of the Gang of Eight even talking about it. And Rubio is the face of this immigration bill. You hear Schumer and Dick Durbin discussing it on occasion, but usually that's just to respond to questions about whether something like enforcement is actually going to happen. Even Rubio was quoted in the last couple of days in a Spanish language broadcast as saying that that legalization is going to come first, and then enforcement will have to follow later, based upon the scheduling of everything. I think that we're after reading through this and after listening to everything that's going on, I get the feeling that we're back to 86. We're gonna end up with a bill that lots of people can say, oh, this is wonderful and solves the problem, and they can take credit for, or think they can take credit for, and it's not going to change much of anything except that it accords political advantage in various areas to specific candidates.
Right.
And mostly to Democrats. You read it. The Republicans are not going to get credit for anything that's good in it, and the Republicans are going to take the heat if the bill does not pass.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword that works against them. There's no doubt about it. And the thing is amazing to me, and where most Americans are in a roar about this, has to do with border security, where it was, you know, first let's fix the border, and now, you know, that's been backed off dramatically. So this is not going to be a prerequisite to any part of, you know, this program.
No, it is not going to be a prerequisite, and we're not going to get the enforcement of the laws if we're not enforcing the laws that we have now. What makes anybody think that passing another law that says we're going to enforce the law is going to make any difference?
Right.
And what I show in the book, what's so obvious is that the most critical element to controlling the entry of illegal immigrants is the knowledge throughout the world that a country enforces its laws. And the knowledge throughout the world right now is that we do not enforce our laws, and I don't see anything in either the rhetoric or this bill that says that's likely to change.
Exactly. Well, you want to enforce the law because it has to do, as you and I discussed before, Bruce, and I agree with you, is that it's about, you know, first of all, it's about national security. How important is national security to you? And to me, everything has to come through that filter. And everything that promotes national security in terms of our protection, those who come in that want to contribute to the greater good and be patriots, hey, you're welcome. Come on in, participate, dream the big dreams, realize your big dreams. We want that to happen. But if you're not going to consider that and all you're doing is considering somebody's vote to trump all things, and then we'll just give you all kinds of goodies, you know, for that. It just becomes a failed situation at this point. I found it quite interesting. I'm sure you read this morning from the CBO on their report, Bruce, that they're saying that immigration reform, like what's being presented here by the Gang of Eight, will actually boost the economy.
That's what they say. They say that it'll add, as I recall, $350 billion or something like that over the next 10 years. And then another $700 billion in the following 10 years. That's based upon the assumption that all of the illegals and all of the STEM graduates are not now paying taxes and will start paying taxes. That's always an argument. They may or they may not, or some of them may or may not, but what that comes to is we're talking of 35 over the next 10 years. They're saying it will save the economy $35 billion a year. $35 billion a year in our $2 trillion or $4 trillion economy is not a huge consideration. We're spending this bill allocates $1 trillion specifically to enforcement issues and border control. And presumably that's going to make the difference and make it work. Enforcing the laws, security. The title of the bill begins with the words border security. Mm-hmm. And yet, other than enforcing the southern border, which arguably is not going to happen or be very effective, the bill doesn't even address security. There is a provision in existing law, which is sunshined in 2015, that says gives a preference to religious workers to enter the country, and that includes radical Islamists such as the Saudis, Wahhabi clerics and Wahhabi workers, to come and work and preach their version of radical Islam. That's clearly a security issue. It is sunshined in current law and will drop out of the law in 2015. This bill that the Senate is now considering eliminates that sunshine and makes that provision permanent.
Wow.
Hardly a security emphasis.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, this is amazing. And the thing they're not even talking about at all, Bruce, I haven't heard any conversation about Hawaii and how Hawaii has been, you know, kind of a big hole in the cheese, you know, of allowing people to get through and gain citizenship. You know, they've discovered here in the last year and a half that Hawaii is one big, humongous birth certificate mill.
That's interesting you should bring that up. One of the things that I point out in my book was that back in 100 years ago, when we were concerned about Japanese immigration, Japanese immigrants, the laws prohibited, or the agreements with Japan, were theoretically prohibited Japanese from coming to this country, except in tiny trickle numbers. But they got around that by going through Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could go to Hawaii easily, and then they could come to the United States from Hawaii legally.
Right. Well, and I don't know how much you know about the birth certificate process there, but, you know, it is just a very simple thing for you to go in, and you don't even have any proof. It's just go in with your word and have a utility bill. And it says you've been residing there in the Hawaiian Islands, and they'll give you a birth certificate.
I was not aware of how easy it was.
It's disturbingly easy. And so we're our focus, this is why I've been saying all along, you know, we so much want to focus south of the border and, you know, Hispanics, but there's so much more. This is why we say there's so many moving parts, as you point out in your book to this, Bruce. And that's why I believe that we need to, you know, narrow this down to say, does it add or take away from our national security? Does it add or take away, you know, from the exceptionalism that our forefathers designed for us? Well, Bruce Thatcher has been our guest. Bruce, always a pleasure to have you with us. He's the author of the book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. This